you mentioned that you don't expect anything bad to happen when you go to a grocery store or take an airline flight, and you certainly shouldn't have to expect bad things to happen to you in a hospital. Can you tell me a little bit more about that thinking?
Yes, I mean, it's very simple. We believe, and we operate the Memorial Hermann Healthcare System on the premise that patients and visitors and staff will have an absolutely safe environment. Okay. You heard Dan discuss we've had six of our hospitals that have gone a year, a complete year, without a single hospital-acquired bloodstream infection or a single hospital-acquired ventilator pneumonia. That's our goal for all of our hospitals. We haven't achieved it in all of them yet, but we actually record a daily run rate, number of days it's been. Some of our hospitals are over 900 days since they've had one of those infections in their hospitals. We really expect that from all of them. I'm going to give you an example, not in healthcare, but have you ever flown on Continental Airlines?
Yes.
Okay. They're the largest provider in Houston, so it's frequent. And the little opening video is from the CEO, Larry Kellner. So I was on a flight about 3 months ago, actually to Washington, D.C., from Houston. And the plane was held at the gate till the very last second. And then right on time, but right before the door was buttoned up, Larry Kellner himself got on the plane. He's very recognizable because of this little introductory video. He's also at least 6 foot six and a big guy. Looks like he was a fullback and a big round face, you know. So he's very recognizable, and he had a name tag on that was this big that said Larry Kellner. So he wore his airline name tag. He got on the plane, sat in his seat, was right opposite me, and the plane buttoned up the door and took off. Okay, he was last second. You know, he was scheduled that way.
Yeah.
Okay, did Larry know who was flying the plane? Did Larry know who the attendants were? No. I heard him talk a little later. His kids were having a birthday party here in Washington, D.C., and he was coming in for the party. And later on, in the middle of the flight, he got up, and I saw him sign some autographs for the stewardesses who'd probably never met him, and he did as usual. He didn't, if you think about it, Mr. Kellner can take any plane of his planes without checking on the credentials of the pilot. All right? Would you, knowing what you do, go to a hospital or a doctor today without checking on credentials and reputation? I wouldn't. I wouldn't suggest any of my family members do that. If any of my family members needed to be hospitalized, I can tell them there's only one place that I know that they should be hospitalized, and that's the Memorial Hermann Hospital. Not that we're where we want to be, but every single one of our hospital employees has gone through the cultural transformation training, which are taken out of their care. They're replaced at the front line, and they actually learn new ways of doing their job every day that is commonly practiced in the aircraft and nuclear energy industries to avoid errors, and that's the way they learn to do their job. We feature our employees who have what we call good catches. One last month, this is a great example, a medication that was packaged wrong from the vendor.
Wow.
Packaged wrong. So it was in our computerized dispensing system. It was in the right bin. It was right. The package was right. The outer package was right. The inner package had a different dose, and it was for a tiny baby, a neonate. And it would have caused terrible harm. And the nurse caught it because we teach them a process called STAR, stop, think, act, and review. And so they stop for 1 second. We train them to stop. This is one of our trainings. This is one of our secrets.
Okay.
Tell the world.
Okay.
Okay? You'll never see this on TV. You can watch all the medical shows you want. You see the nurses get the medicine, and they draw it up, and they inject it. Okay? We train our employees and our nurses and pharmacists not to do that. We train them to wait 1 second, because industrial safety experts will tell you that the chance of making an error falls off in a curve that goes like this with the amount of time you spend thinking about it before you do it. Mm-hmm. And if you just wait 1 second, you drop the error rate to 10% of what it was before.
Wow.
This is for anything. This is for choosing a something out of a candy machine.
Hmm.
So the 1 second, that's all it won't add to your work day. Think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. But you catch packaging errors, things that are literally, you say, oh, those are beyond your control.
Mm-hmm.
That was done at the factory. We try to catch those. And we basically believe that patients should come to our hospital to be treated accurately, evidence-based, for whatever disease they have, and they should be absolutely safe in our environment. They should be as safe in our hospital as Larry Kellner is on one of his planes. And it's the same thing.
Excellent. Now, Dan said that you're aiming for perfect care. Is that realistic?
Is it realistic? The answer is yes. Yes, yes. Will we achieve human perfection? The answer to that is no. But what we've learned in our BIPs, campaign and our learning is that, again, what's been learned in aviation, nuclear power, other high reliability, naval aviation, high reliability industries, that you build a culture of safety that allows for human errors to be caught. See, you can't prevent every conceivable error. We can't prevent every packaging error that occurs at a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere, but we have the safety checks. You know, our medications, our patients are barcoded. We scan them every time a medication's given to make sure that it's the right patient. We're adding a $3 million system this year that will repackage every dose of medication so that every single medication, every single time, will be barcoded, and the patient's barcoded, and the computer makes sure that it's the right dose, the right time, the right patient, right. That's how we will catch, and that's how we're currently catching any errors, human errors, that may occur in the process. So we put in all the checks. If you're going to have surgery at our hospital, we take a timeout in the operating room, and you've probably heard of this. And we double check. We go right down to the beginning. Who are you? Okay, your name tag, your barcode, your tag, the procedure. We go over it again. We have you've marked the site if it's right or left. We double check that. We check your forms. We check everything. And then we check your antibiotics to make sure that they're on board. We check your prophylaxis for blood clots in your leg, deep venous thrombosis to prevent that and pulmonary emboli. All that's checked in the timeout before you ever go under anesthesia or a knife comes near you.
Was that inspired by Atul Gawande's checklist that he recommends for pre-op?
Actually,
it
was separate, but it is exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
It is exactly the same thing. And you probably saw, if you didn't, I can send it to you, last week's, I'm a surgeon, so the American College of Surgeons bulletin had a headline, which I actually made a slide of, that was Atul's work, and it says, surgical checklist proven to save lives. It's a fabulous headline.
Yes.
It's the same kind of a checklist that Larry Kellner's pilots use in the cockpit.
That's right.
It's the same thing. Yeah, and if you go into our operating rooms, you'll actually see the checklist, and they go down it one by one by one by one by one. Because it sounds impossible, but wrong patients have shown up in the operating room.
Sure.
If you have a patient who's confused and the transporter doesn't go through these checks, that's why our transporters, our maintenance workers, everybody goes through this program. Everybody. There's no exceptions. Doesn't matter how far away from patient care the person might be. Let's say they're a maintenance person that does light bulbs. Guess what? They can see a patient climbing out of bed.
That's right.
And that might fall. and they can alert somebody. But if it's like not their job, as it was maybe in the past, it was, but now everybody is in this culture of safety. And that's why we didn't pick this, you know, just the nurses or the pharmacists. It's literally everybody that works on the campus. The folks in the admissions office, the business people, all gone through the same training because they all work there, and everybody has a chance to prevent an error.
Now tell me a little bit about some of the investments that are being made by the board without any obvious return on investment. You mentioned the barcoding was super expensive, but you believed it was the right thing to do to reduce errors. Are there other initiatives like that that were quite expensive, but were just simply the right thing?
Well, you heard Dan talk about the $18 million that was invested in breakthroughs in patient safety. Aside from the consultant teams that came in and taught the classes, of which there were hundreds, if not thousands, all that money didn't go to them, only a tiny fraction did. The real cost was when you take nurses or pharmacists out of practice. During the day, you have to replace them at the going rate at the bedside. So you're really paying two at once. It's really very, very expensive to do that training. So that was $18 million. That was a lot. The $3 million investment for the market, that is purely safety. There is absolutely no other ROI on that from safety. It's not more efficient. It isn't more. It's just absolute raw safety. And relatively few hospitals have done that. Our initiative to eliminate, not reduce, make it very clear, eliminate hospital-acquired infections, right, which involved changing practices, physician practices, nurse practices, and culture, took a large personnel investment. To get that training out there. And some of it was just me meeting with doctors, you know, doctor after doctor, which is hard. And you can't put a cost on that, but it was necessary.
I just wanted to ask you about the infections. You know, there's a lot of people out there have MRSA when they come to the hospital.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
And so what do you do? Do you take extra effort to document that so then it's not considered a hospital-acquired infection?
I wouldn't have thought of this unless you asked, but I can tell you that we are, to my knowledge, the only hospital in Houston that tests. We test every ICU, every adult ICU admission is given a new test, which is not reimbursed. It's a DNA. It's a PCR replication test for DNA for MRSA, and we isolate them, everyone, on admission to the ICU.
If they're positive.
No, we don't know that for.
Is it a nasal
12
swab
to 24
or
hours.
Is it?
It's a nasal swab. Okay. It's $24 a patient. We admit 20,000 adult ICU patients a year to our system.
Wow.
And we isolate them. So their family's isolated, all the nurses are in gowns. We only unisolate them, take them out of isolation when the test comes back negative.
And that's for the ICU.
That's where the highest risk is. That's where the highest risk.
Because they've
those
got
patients
the catheters.
They got catheters. The patients are sick when they're admitted. Other high-risk patients are also tested at the discretion of the physician. Nursing home residents, because these things travel around nursing homes patient for patient. So high-risk patients, oh, I should mention, any patient who's had MRSA before is caught in our computer system as a permanent record until they're cleared of it, which can occur, but it's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
So the next time they come in, they're isolated again regardless of the test. Hmm. They're only taken out of isolation if they actually have three negative tests. So we're doing that. We implemented this last year. The cost of this program is $750,000, $800,000. It's completely unreimbursed. It's totally to protect patients.
Wow.
That's the kind of investment we're making. And I got to tell you, we're in very tough economic times. I don't actually need to tell you that, but I mean, with regard to hospitals, especially nonprofit hospitals, it's very tough because fewer and fewer patients have insurance because they're losing their jobs.
Yeah.
More and more have nothing. They're actually self-pay, which means they don't pay at all, and they're not covered by governmental programs.
And my final question to you
is
related to what you mentioned about transparency, that you're very committed to making available your infection rate and morbidity mortality data to the public. But the shame is that the public is not accessing this information. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I know for certain that Memorial Hermann was the first hospital. It may be the only. I really haven't checked the other hospital sites years ago to put our quality data and safety data online. And we've continued to refine the format and make it's designed for lay individuals, so that it's more easily understandable than, say, the hospital compare site, which I know you've looked at, but I think leaves many patients agog at what they're looking at. Mm. So we have a very straightforward site. It's accessed right off the main page, the home page of the Memorial Hermann. So, you know, safety statistics or something like that, you click on that, you get them. We've refined that to make it, we show our data over time, we show national comparisons and so on, and it's much more current than the national site. But as we've audited the IP addresses of those who access the site, we still have the majority of our hits are from inside the Memorial Hermann system. And that's a shame.
Yeah.
We publicize that, you know, as much as we can, but we think the public is just they're not looking at it. I mean, maybe they are. Our system currently has about 26% of the inpatient care in Southeast Texas, and that's a growing percentage. So maybe that is having an effect. Maybe it's our patient satisfaction. Maybe we don't know actually what's fueling the growth, but we're pleased to see the growth because we think we're providing a very high quality and very safe product. But it's hard to say that it's being driven by public accesses to our quality data.
Is there anything else that you'd like to get out to America about hospital safety? What do they need to know, what do they need to do about it?
I think that if the public knew what we knew, what you and I know, that they would pay a lot more attention to the actual available evidence that a hospital was safe and effective before they allowed their physician to place them there. They may have a very fine physician, but once the physician admits you, and someone else is taking care of all your medications and all your IVs and everything that's in them and your procedures, some of which are invasive, operations, x-rays, it's in someone else's hands. Hospitals and medicine is a high-risk environment, just like airplanes used to be. And I've got terrific data on naval aviation. I spent a day and a half on an aircraft carrier learning their safety systems, and I learned so much, and it's the basis of a whole talk that I give. I'm going to give part of it tomorrow, including videos from the flight deck. They made a science of safety, and they took, I can tell you the statistics, in the 50s, before the program started, the Navy, our Navy, lost 654 planes a year.
Jeez.
A year. All right.
That's a lot.
These are like two crashes a day.
Oh my goodness.
All right, think of it. Now think of you when these incidents occur now, they make the news. All right. The carrier I was on was in War Games. They had 130 flight operations, takeoffs and landings, the day that I was there. And they do this all the time. They are training all the time for what may be an immediate call to active duty. And I actually checked before, because I went out there and did an arrested landing and took a catapult takeoff to get there and back. I checked on the safety statistics, because I'm kind of a safety nut, before I went. And their incident rate for even an accident is one in every 175,000 flight operations. And I figured that was a whole lot less than my drive down to San Diego from Los Angeles, where I lived at the time. So we need to take lessons from, I think patients should be much more careful about where they go. And if the hospital actually can't demonstrate their quality and safety statistics, or if they keep it private and confidential, which is what used to be done, I think they should ask their doctor to admit them someplace else.